it's beginning to look a lot like lame duck. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's great to be back with you, Barry. You know, we did try to record a show for last week, and this is our show for November 17th. We tried to do one for November 10th so we could do some election analysis. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I was on vacation in Williamsburg, Virginia, and we tried to do it remotely. And, let's just say...
And they don't call it Colonial Williamsburg for no reason, Chuck. I mean, obviously, Wi-Fi was not invented
in that era. I was using some 18th century equipment. Actually, you know what? We'd have been better off if the equipment had been older, because Skype doesn't work the way it used to. And had Skype worked the way it used to. Thanks a lot, Microsoft, by the way, for quote-unquote improving yet another program into oblivion. Microsoft is infamous for buying companies, and Microsoft does own Skype, and changing things to the point where they don't work. Well, Skype still works, but it won't do things that it used to do, and one of the things is allow you to flip audio over to a third-party program. So we couldn't record. Just to cut all the technical yada yada out, we couldn't record last week, so you got a rerun. This week, I'm very happy to report, even despite some equipment failures on this end, some of my equipment's getting a little old and it wants to break down, we are able to record by the magic of Skype, even though Skype isn't quite as magical as it used to be. But I'm glad to be back in the office here because we've got so much going on, and believe it or not, we did have an election, and we do have an opinion on what happened, and you'll undoubtedly hear some of that today.
Right, or you will be sitting there wishing we had done another rerun.
Yes, exactly. You might be saying, oh, man, can't you guys go back to talking about liberty and founding documents issues and that kind of thing?
But we will be talking about that while talking about election returns.
Undoubtedly, yes.
The Constitution and liberty are playing quite a role in some of these races right now. So, I mean, it's interesting, Chuck, because, you know, we've talked about the perpetual campaign. You know, it always feels like right after the election's over with, the next election has begun. Well, I think we've now crossed that threshold where that point on the Venn diagram where all of the circles converge together and you find that little kind of odd-shaped triangle where all three of them have the same interest point. Because I think we now have the next election being partially fought out and determined before the results of the current election are finalized.
Oh, absolutely. But that's not that new.
Well, no, I mean, it isn't in some sense, except for the fact that I think it's now in hyperdrive because, it used to be in small little pockets, maybe here, maybe there. But it's almost become a systemic problem now. And of course, you know, as you and I talk and we look and we see our posts of our friends on social media, you get these wags out here having fun. I just talked to you about one off air this morning.
Yes, you did.
Where, you know, there was a story that came out of Florida about a week or so ago about some guy finding and killing this 19 and a half foot long python. Because people drop their exotic snakes when they can't handle them or don't want them anymore off in the Everglades, and then they thrive in that environment because there's lots to eat down there, and they grow and they grow and they grow, and so you end up with like these massive exotic snakes in the Florida Everglades. Well, somebody is, I guess, is the largest one they found, 19 and a half feet long. Some wag put up a little post that says, you know, man finds and kills, cuts it open and finds three boxes of uncounted Democratic ballots. And honestly, Chuck, that's really not far from the truth, because in the Florida election, as we know right now, as we just found out here yesterday, it is going to a hand recount in Florida because of, what is it, Palm Beach County and Broward County couldn't meet the deadline for doing the automatic recounts, the machine recounts. And I think at least Broward County did it intentionally to go to a hand recount, because that's the way Florida law, I believe, specifies. that if you can't certify all, or can't, you know, the boards of elections do not submit in at the time that they are required to do so, the election result, the final count, then it goes to, first it went to they couldn't determine if everything was done, and so they had to count absentees and provisionals, and then they had to do it by machine recount. Now they've got to do it by hand recount. Well, each time, and every day, it seems like almost every day since the election finalized, we're hearing of places where uncounted ballots are being found. And I think the strangest one I heard, Chuck, and I haven't had the opportunity to really verify this, but I've heard it in multiple media, is that they found a container of ballots. I believe it was from Broward County.
Almost for sure.
Trunk of a rental car at the airport.
Barry, this is starting to sound like the way that the Minnesota senatorial election was stolen.
Oh yeah, the Al Franken election.
Al Franken election. Ballots in trash bags in the back of cars. There is a provision in Florida law that's been violated left and right here in Broward County. On election night, within 30 minutes of the closing of the balloting, they are required to give a count of total votes cast. In other words, they are to have all the absentees, all the early voting, and all of the voting, at least the raw numbers of how many people voted, tabulated.
Yeah, and that also counts the provisionals as well. Yeah.
Exactly. Counts all the provisionals as well. That number started out at something like 530,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then within early in the next morning, it was up to 600,000. And later the next morning, it was up to 680,000, and then it was like up to 720,000. So in other words, after they were required to give the total number of votes cast, the number increased by over 200,000 votes. In other words, it increased by one third, better than one third, close to a quarter.
And do you know why it did, Chuck? I think we see the answer because there's an article that is out. I think it was came out yesterday. And this is Dateline Florida, and this was Broward County's at the ground zero of this whole thing, along with some other counties. I guess it comes to find out that a reporter for the Naples Daily News, how I started doing a little digging and found out that the Florida Democratic Party was asking voters, their base, to submit absentee ballots after the election day and use a form and alter a form to make it look like they were doing it by the legal deadline so they can add to the count.
There is a provision which lets you correct if you have discovered that you have cast your vote incorrectly. They have a provision that allows you to do, I forget what they call the reconciliation.
It's a signature issue, yeah.
Yeah, what they call the form you fill out and what they call it. But it allows you to correct an incorrect absentee ballot. Okay?
Yeah, well, but here's
so
the
they
problem.
Were filing there, they were filing these pieces of paper after the fact in order to vote when they hadn't voted.
Yeah, now here's the thing. That's called a cure affidavit. It's to cure the improprieties or the problems on your absentee ballot. The problem is the deadline for submitting that was the 5th of November.
Exactly. It's
which is the day before the election. I mean, you can submit absentee ballots or fix problems in one that you maybe sent in earlier. But what they were doing was what the Florida Democrat Party was doing was they were sending out to their people forms that had the date modified from November the 5th to November the 8th, 2 days after
the deadline,
the election, 2 days after they started getting the return numbers and realizing that both Andrew Gillum, their candidate for governor, and Bill Nelson, their Senate incumbent, were both likely to lose. So all of a sudden now, and they didn't send it just in Broward, but they also sent it throughout Florida. So these forms showed up, these altered forms showed up not only in Broward, but in Santa Rosa, Citrus, and Okaloosa counties. This is a fairly extensive fraud. Because, you know, Chuck, we can't get the death penalty for people who murder unborn babies. We can't get righteous biblical justice for many, many crimes against persons. However, if you mess with the elections laws, these penalties are probably harsher than most murder penalties. These are felony offenses to alter ballots or to attempt to, you know, defraud an election. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this has happened. But I guess there's already been a complaint filed or report filed to the federal prosecutor's office in Florida. So it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, honestly, if this keeps going the way it's going and spinning the way it's spinning, Chuck, we may not have a completed election in the state of Florida for 6 months. They will try to get it done, obviously, because they've got to certify, because January is when new terms start, et cetera, and so we've got to figure out what we're doing. But this is crazy.
Okay, you have to remember, there's another issue that's going on in Florida. And that
there's a lot of issues going on.
Well, there's a lot of
issues.
You know,
this is a key one.
This is the one where, in fact, the Democratic Party is openly arguing. Actually, they're not doing it openly. They're trying to keep it a secret. But they're arguing that non-citizen votes should count. Their argument before the court is that non-citizen votes should count, because what happened in Broward County, the head elections official, whose name's Snipes,
Brenda Snipes
allowed the intermingling of eligible and ineligible ballots in the count. And what's happening?
Allowed it or directed it to be done?
Well, directed it to be done.
Okay. Right there is your first indication. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact is that the attorneys for Snipes and for the Democratic Party are arguing that those votes should be allowed to count. So that
because they added those non-eligible votes in, we should count them now.
Yes. They should.
So basically, the Florida legislature has determined that votes coming from certain non-citizens, felons, etc., are impermissible.
Yeah, essentially.
But a county supervisor who appointed by Jeb Bush, has decided that in her wisdom and in thwarting of Florida election law, she directs to have these non-eligible votes mixed into the count, and so since they recognize them as part of the count, that's the legal hook or ground or exemption that the Democratic Party's lawyers are using to try to get them counted.
Yeah, exactly.
And folks, you know, I believe Florida sits in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, if I remember correctly, federal. So I'm guessing that they're probably going to find a number of, shall we say, activist judges and justices that will give them exactly what they want.
Well, we'll see. I mean, this is beyond, so far beyond the pale. Now, here's the problem. Most of you out there haven't heard of this. Why? Because if you're still watching Alphabet News, what Donald Trump calls fake news, properly, they're not talking about it. Why? Because it's embarrassing. Because it means that they might not be able to steal an election. When I say they, I mean officials with the backing of the news media. Yep. And by the way, these are the same guys who were claiming that essentially the reporters should be in charge of White House press briefings. And you can find that because they're all coming out in support of Jim Acosta, who essentially had his press credentials removed for, shall we say, indecorous behavior in a press briefing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, welcome back from your coma, because it's everywhere. Jim Acosta essentially attempted to run a coup d'etat on a press briefing and basically take over the moderator spot, and the president of the United States told him to sit down and be quiet. He had had his question, and it was answered. And he continued, I want to do a follow-up. And he says, no more follow-ups, fake news. No follow-ups, fake news. And he said, get his mic. And the intern went over to take the microphone, and Acosta pushed her hand away. Well, it was
so Acosta accosted her,
yeah. Essentially, then there were silly reports about how they floated this for a while, and then it went away. The White House had used doctored video to make it look worse than it was. And I said, it was plenty bad on its own. Who cares? You know, this, and it turns out that the quote unquote doctored video was the fact that, I think Melania or maybe Sarah Sanders put out a thing in which they used a second generation video. Well, what happens when you start duping video, you copy of a video,
right?
It deteriorates. Yeah. So what somebody said, and CNN had an expert come out and quote unquote, it's a doctored video. And another expert came out and said, well, good job, expert. But what happened was that Sanders released a second or third generation video that had the framing was, you know, off in it. So no, it wasn't doctored. The fact is Acosta pushed the woman's hand away, the young girl. And he had his press credentials removed. Well, they're arguing that his right of freedom of the press is being oppressed. And I'm like, okay, here's the problem with that argument. There we go back.
Okay,
to the,
I have a couple of ideas of problems with that argument. Tell me yours, and I'll tell you mine.
We go back to the Constitution. The right of freedom of the press shall not be infringed. Okay, right. His personal free, he has no personal free right. If he started his own company and printed his own paper or had his own media company and put out videos or audios or whatever kind of news, then he has the right to publish what he wants to publish. What he doesn't have the right to do is go into a press briefing and take it over. He is not in charge of who has the floor at any given time. That is normally the press secretary, or if the president is running the show, it's the president of the United States. Jim Acosta, I think, personally, is lucky that the Secret Service did not arrest him. Now, why didn't the Secret Service arrest him? For attempting to essentially force the president to require him to allow him to continue, because it's a PR bad move. Had the Secret Service come in and put him in cuffs and hauled him off, it would have been a real PR bad move. Now, here are the facts. CNN has not had its right to attend press briefings taken away. They're basically being told, no, you give somebody else the press credential because Acosta's not getting them back. And, you know, the argument is that he asked the president tough questions that he can't answer. And he's asking questions that no one expects the president to answer. It's all, you know, they're all about Russia. They're all about this. They're all about that. That had nothing to do with what the press briefing was about. And Jim Acosta does not run the press briefings. That's the problem. We have a press who now thinks that they're in charge of, you know, of these kinds of things. The president comes out or Sarah Sanders comes out and they're talking about some bill that's being, what do the questions go to? They go to a subject that has nothing to do with anything. They go to Michael Avenatti or Stormy Daniels or whatever goofy distraction that the press can come up with to try to bring things around to the narratives that they want to create. And it's sort of like, you know, we're here to talk about this bill and why the president has decided to sign it or veto it or whatever. And you guys are talking about this junk. I mean, look, these distractions have gone on through the whole election cycle. And, you know, we've just had nonsense from the press. How about digging down and taking a truly balanced approach to the news? And we're not going to see that. Why? Because the press has been absolutely dead set against Donald Trump since the day he announced his candidacy. They laughed. He has a 0% chance. Well, that 0% chance turned into a 100% chance. So that's why you have to look at these things from a broader perspective. CNN has not had its right to publish taken away. They still have the freedom of the press. They can still run the propaganda machine that they've been running since day one. You can still get little Brian Stelter. We now know the president did that when the president did nothing of the type. You know, am I making fun of Brian Stelter? Of course I am, because he's a little pipsqueak who basically is using his bully pulpit to try to undermine the president of the United States. You know, I didn't like it when some of the right-wing media was doing it to Barack Obama, just taking some of the things that he was saying and twisting them into something else. So I haven't liked it on either side. And there were people that I walked away from and didn't listen to because they were doing, I would hear, and I still see it. I see some of the media on the other side saying things, in very inflammatory things about Democrats and politicians and that kind of thing. And the things they're saying are not true. In fact, they are essentially statements are taken out of context and blown up into something they are not. There's plenty of bad out there, Barry. There's plenty of bad things that Democrats and Republicans are doing, and you don't need to take them out of context and make them say stuff that they don't say.
Well, you know, that's true. But you know, they tend to do that a lot.
Yes,
well, all sides tend to do
it
that.
It sells papers.
Speaking of miscontextualization, I want to apologize. It's not the Fifth Circuit; it's the 11th Circuit that Florida sets in. So, I just want to clarify that error in the record.
That's okay. Yeah, fifth is. You know them better than I do. I don't remember which districts are which now. I thought fifth was like D.C. and Virginia.
Yeah, you're right, because I don't know what I was thinking, but Florida, yeah, it's the 11th. So.
Well, if that's the worst mistake you make today, we're in good shape.
Oh, I'm sure I'll make plenty more, even worse mistakes, probably before we even get done with this sentence. But no, you know, speaking of vote counting, vote counting can be very, very trying, you know, with all the stuff going on in Florida. You know, we're now to a hand recount in Georgia. The Democrat who lost the governor's race, Stacey Adams, is now crying for a recount. And you know, even our own U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown said if Stacey Adams loses the governor's race, then there was corruption involved and the Republicans stole the election from
her. Look, this is a narrative that's being set up.
Of course it is.
She lost by like 4 or 5 percentage points or something.
Right, which is, if you want a recount, young lady, first of all, okay, it may go by Georgia law. They may be a little bit different, but I know in Ohio, if the difference in a race, a head-to-head race, is less than 0.5%, it's an automatic recount
right.
of the ballot.
And that's what's going on in Florida in the Senate race.
If it's less than, I believe, okay, maybe I'm going to get this wrong. This may be my second error, Chuck. I think if it's less than 1% difference between the races, but more than 0.5%, then a party can ask for and pay for a recount, either the entire race or in specific precincts. And it's not cheap. And this happened in the spring during the primary for the 12th Congressional District, where Troy Balderson, the Republican primary, Troy Balderson won, but he won in a suspicious way by taking like 80%+ of Muskingum County. And Melanie Linehan, who came in second, smelled a rat and asked for a recount and paid for a recount, which then was corrupted by the Muskingum County Board of Elections officials, who violated the law, at least the letter and spirit of the law, by privately recounting them, opening the box, because these ballot boxes are sealed, and they stay sealed until an official recount has to take place or official count is done. But they, and when you ask for a recount and you pay for it, those boxes are unsealed in front of the candidate or their representatives.
Right.
And the other team, anybody else who was involved in the race, can send representatives to watch the recount. Well, when she got there, they wheeled out a cart with open ballot boxes, and they already had filled in the tallies that was their recount, which is in violation of law. But we came to find out, as she filed challenges all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court, that the Ohio legislature had written in a little provision, funny how that is, that those rules didn't apply to a federal race.
Oh, come on. Seriously?
Seriously. That's exactly. So right now, I think they're looking at trying to sue to strike that down as being a unconstitutional equal protection violation.
Yeah, before you
because
say to yourself,
treating candidates, you're treating the count for a candidate of a state race differently than you're counting the recount procedures for a federal candidate.
Yeah, before you're saying to yourself, oh, you know, well, she should give it up. No. She realizes that he's been certified. He's taken the oath of office. He's in the office. That's not what she's suing for. She's suing for the law to be applied. She's demanding that the law be applied. Now, it wouldn't turn over an election result at this point. She's suing so that the law is clarified properly, so that it can't happen again. Now, look. Election fraud has been going on since time immemorial. As long as we've had elections, people have bought votes, people have stuffed ballot boxes. I mean, there's a reason why Lyndon Johnson was called Landslide Lyndon in his first race, I think, for the Senate. He was short some votes. In other words, he had lost the seat. I think this was in a primary, perhaps, or it's been a while since I read the book. By the way, it's Robert K. Rowe's book, I think, Path to Power. It's been years since I read it. But Landslide Lyndon won by turning in votes from a place that where, very interestingly, the people voted in alphabetical order, and they all voted for Lyndon Johnson. Well, what does that mean? That means somebody went through the voter rolls and saw who hadn't voted and simply filled out ballots for them in alphabetic order. I mean, talk about dumb, but it didn't matter because it wasn't going to change the election result. Landslide Lyndon got his job.
Yep.
This goes on. And this is the reason why you have election law. This is the problem with having the parties in charge of writing election law. You know, the parties, they're... We had talked with Mike O'Reilly on Thursday, and he asked me about the Libertarian Challenge, who are suing John Houston so they can remain keep their ballot access because they had less than 3% voted Libertarian, and so they lost their ballot access. Well, as we've seen in the past, the Libertarians very often are given or don't have ballot access when certain secretaries of state want them to be able to rob votes from one party or another. In other words, if you wanted to divert votes away from the Democratic Party, you would make sure the Greens had a spot on the ballot. If you wanted to divert votes away from the Republican Party and you're a Democratic Secretary of State, you would make sure the Libertarians are on the ballot. Or the Constitution Party is on the ballot.
Yeah, that's right.
Because that's who's going to take votes away from the Republican Party. It goes on, and then on the next election, oh, I'm sorry, you didn't meet the criteria, you can't be on the ballot. Barry, I am one of those people that says that is 100% nonsense. All declared and legitimate parties, even the rent is too darned high party, and I replaced the D word there, too darned high. Remember that guy? The rent is too darn high.
Right.
That guy should be allowed access to the ballot, too, if he can get a requisite number of signatures, and it should be as low as possible, maybe 1,000. He should appear under a party label. I'm one of those people. I want free and equal access of minor parties to the ballot. Why don't the major parties want that? Because they know it throws a wild card into the system. And occasionally, some of those minor parties, everybody's mad at the two majors. Occasionally, that what that means is one of those minor parties pulls enough. And I will tell you where that happened in Minnesota in the 90s.
Yes, it did.
We had
to create a governor.
See? We had a governor, Jesse Ventura. And who did he beat out? He beat out Hubert Humphrey III. I think Hubert Humphrey's son. And he beat out a Republican whose name escapes me now. It didn't matter. They had for the term of the governorship, they had a Libertarian Party governor. Why? Because he got 34% of the vote. This is why Democrats and Republicans hate the idea of a third party having ballot access. Just think of what the Libertarians could have done in Minnesota had they had, instead of just the governor's seat, had they picked up 10 or 12 members of the legislature. They don't have to have a majority. They just have to have a block.
Sure.
We've talked about this many, many times. And the Freedom Caucus essentially must have been listening to us, because that's essentially what they do with Jim Jordan. And not just Jim Jordan, but before him, I forget who it was.
If I may segue just a real quick second, since you brought up Jim Jordan and the Freedom Caucus, just a quick headline. The election for minority leader took place on Wednesday. And unfortunately, Jim Jordan, who was head-to-head against
Kevin McCarthy.
Kevin McCarthy, who was the number two under Paul Ryan, Jim's bid to become minority leader was rejected by the Republican caucus, who are now sitting in the minority, because they felt like having someone who was part of the reason why they lost seats lead them or try to be conciliatory to Nancy Pelosi was a better idea than someone who would fight to try
exactly.
to get them back in the majority. Yes, that's my take on it entirely, not anybody else's. But again, you know, I always said that the Republican Party is the gang that if they were moving along at a rapid pace and running, they'd find a way to shoot themselves in the foot to hobble themselves.
Well,
I think that was a shot in the foot. And it's already bearing some bitter fruit, because the announcement was already made that McCarthy and company are not interested in pushing for the second round of the tax cuts that the president is looking for the American public.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of having the divisive fight with Speaker Pelosi and the Democratic majority.
Well, if you listen to any other shows, we talked about the fact that Paul Ryan was stepping down. He should have stepped out of the speakership and allowed
yes.
someone else to take over who was going to lead the troops to we'll talk about that. Basically what you described, Barry, is there was a book in the 60s called The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was essentially a kind of a low comedy look at some gangsters in New York who basically couldn't do anything right. Written by a guy named Jimmy Breslin. It was a funny book. It won't mean much now because everybody's long since out of the picture. It's 50 years ago. Okay, that being said, where I was going with that was all you need inside the House to have a major influence is a block. Is a block of votes. The Freedom Caucus has absolutely shown that. So has the Congressional Black Caucus. These little blocks can hold legislation hostage until they get what they want.
Right. And folks, for those of you who are unaware that there's more than just the two major party caucuses, the Democrat and Republican, you know, we've heard about the Freedom Caucus and, of course, the Legislative Black Caucus. Those are ones who get a lot of airtime. But there are dozens and dozens and dozens of small caucuses within government, within both the federal and the state level. There's the Sportsman's Caucus. There's the Farm Caucus. There's the you name a special interest issue. There's a caucus around it where you have a handful of members who that's an important issue back home in their districts. And so therefore they usually try to vote as a block on those particular things. You know, the tobacco caucus, which was historically led by Jesse Helms. You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could, I think we named the top two, the two most effective in the House is probably the Freedom Caucus and the Congressional Black Caucus. And they're highly effective at what they do, for good or for bad. That's the kind of thing. And now, why would the Republicans are going to do their best to try to slough the losses off on the conservatives. Well, sorry, folks. That on its face is patent absurdity, because let's look at the numbers. In I'm going to go off memory here, but in Bill Clinton's first midterms in 1994, Bill Clinton lost 60 seats in the House. Okay? In Barack Obama's first midterm, which would have been 2010, he lost 67 seats. And in fact, he lost control of the House. And the same thing happened to Bill Clinton. Now, come full circle back to 2018, Donald Trump's first midterm, he lost 33 seats at most. There, with the recount still going on, and the Democrats coming up with new ways to steal elections. And again, I'm not handing out that particular moniker only to them. It's been done by both parties. But the fact is, they've only been able to steal 33. Think about that. It's half what Barack Obama lost. What does that tell you? Almost always the president loses, the sitting president loses members of his own party during the first midterm. How many did he lose versus Barack Obama? Less than half. What does that tell you? That gives you a pretty good inkling that this was a tough fought election, and the fact that people are happier with Donald Trump than the press would like you to believe. They want to look upon this as a bloodbath. When you pick up two seats in the Senate, two or three seats in the Senate, that's not supposed to happen.
Right. Well, you know, that's right. You know, it's supposed to be losses in both chambers. But, you know, here's the other thing, too, Chuck. I mean, you know, and you and I both are friends with certain folks who are politically minded and post a lot on Facebook. But they're going out there saying, you know, this is the biggest number of seats lost since Watergate. And I'm like, no it's not
even close.
I mean, okay, so maybe for a Republican it might be in a midterm, but it's not since Watergate, the largest number of seats that are flipped in a midterm, because the Democrats lose more seats. We talked about this before. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama both lost large numbers of seats in their midterm elections.
Exactly.
A much larger numbers than this president is projected to lose. So, again, it just stuff like that is just like, okay, you know, okay, be careful about how you put that out there, because, you know, and again, some of these folks have shown a propensity for being, you know, the never Trump kind of folks. So they're trying to figure out any way they can make it look horrible for this administration. And it's like, let's index it. Let's index it apples to apples. How's that?
Well, you wouldn't want that. I mean, that blows the narrative.
Well, I know exactly. Well, and that means that your narrative is probably not factual.
Yeah, it's got a problem. Well, look, you want to see a narrative that's being built? All you got to do is look at the gubernatorial election in Georgia.
Yeah, well, that's true. That is true.
Stacey Abrams lost, and she lost by enough that it really shouldn't be a problem. But the way it's being set up, in 20 years, people will look back and call this the stolen election. Even though Brian Kemp won by a significant percentage. What's being done is they're setting up an argument that was attempted in 2000 in the Florida election. That is, there was voter suppression. That Brian Kemp is the architect of a vast conspiracy to strip Latinos and blacks and all kinds of different racial entities from being allowed to vote in Georgia. And they've got, I think, three dozen lawyers working on a lawsuit. This is what they're going to do. Places like the Associated Press, and Hillary Clinton has come out and said that the Republicans stole the election in Georgia. Well, how do you steal an election with that many votes cast by like 4 or 5%? How do you do that? The answer is you can't. You can't steal enough votes.
Well, no, I don't know. In this day and age, Chuck, it might actually be possible because, you know, I'm guessing that they'll try a tactic of, well, we just have to recast the entire election and just everybody has to vote in December. Yeah, if we don't get what we want, we're just going to keep voting until we do. Yeah, that's sort of that whole idea, you know, like what Thomas Jefferson was nominated on the 37th ballot. You know, we're just going to keep balloting until people just get run out of money, run out of patience, or run out of supporters to get them across the finish line. Well, and we win.
Speaking of mistakes, I'm looking at the numbers here. Kemp only won 50.2 to 49.8. So in other words, there's he's 18,000 votes over the threshold to avoid a runoff.
Well, there you go.
Now, what they're trying to do is claim that 18,000 votes were suppressed, and so they want to force a runoff in December. Now, yes. What do you think would happen, honestly, if a runoff were forced in December under these kinds of circumstances?
Oh, you don't even have to think about it. You know what would happen.
Yeah, Kemp would run away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Run away. Because people don't like this kind of tactic.
Indeed.
All this lawsuit and blah, blah, blah. Look, there are times to bring a lawsuit like Melanie Lanahan. I think she was correct to bring the lawsuit. She knows, again, that she's not going to suddenly be awarded the seat. Because he's been elected again since that election. What you're trying to do is make sure that election law gets applied properly and equally. So I think that's a legitimate lawsuit. This would be a joke lawsuit. Well, votes were suppressed. How do you prove vote suppression? Well, you can't. What you do is the only way to prove it would be to have witnesses who said armed guards kept me from the door of the ballot place. Can they prove that? No. So what are they going to do? It was a psychological warfare, and they'll get some experts to come in and quote unquote experts, the same kind of experts who essentially said that Jim Acosta the video was doctored. That's the kind of you get a RENA expert. There are experts who, for the right amount of money or for the right political reasons, who will come out and say anything. And I mean anything. We've all seen it. There are experts who will testify at trials, quote-unquote experts who will testify at trials that murderers were, their parents called them bad names, and therefore it's okay that they committed murder to get them out of a death penalty. No. That's the kind of expertise, quote unquote, that you'll see. This is, wow. It's an ugly kind of thing. Well, you know, what you'll find out of this is that will be called for. I can see out of this chaos what's going to be called for, and that's going to be federal control of all election laws. In Florida, what should be happening? Well, the Secretary of State should have stepped in and should have already basically disqualified Ms. Snipes from having anything to do with a recount, because she is essentially, it's not just misfeasance, it's malfeasance. And if you don't know the difference, misfeasance is basically being a bumbling idiot. Malfeasance is essentially maliciously doing things to undermine the results of your own job. That's malfeasance. In other words, you're attempting to subvert the process. And what Snipes is doing is a malfeasance, not a misfeasance. You know, they're blaming old equipment for the recount. It's old equipment. It's 20 years old, and it, you know, it's old, and it breaks down, and it overheats. How come nobody else had any trouble other than Broward County? How come nobody else had any trouble?
Well, they did. Palm Beach County is having trouble.
Look, the two counties that always have trouble are Palm Beach and Broward.
Now, who are heavily Democrat, both.
Both. And if you'll recall, the way the Democrats tried to remedy this issue in 2000 and to steal the election in 2000 from George W. Bush was to do what they called statistical sampling. In other words, mm-hmm. they did not want to recount all ballots. They wanted to take a statistical sampling of ballots and declare winners in certain counties, democratically controlled, all four of them. They wanted to do a statistical sampling and declare winners based on those statistical samples. That was the argument that was made.
Oh, boy.
Now they're arguing that illegal votes should be counted. Here's the dirty secret that nobody's telling anybody. And this is why I was absolutely opposed to motor voter when it came out in the 90s, if you'll recall. I was one of those people that said this is the worst mistake you can make, when you automatically register people to vote when they get their driver's license. Well, you're not asking citizenship questions when you are registering people for their driver's license, right? Supposedly you're looking at their naturalization papers. How close do they really look? Their birth
well,
papers.
Depends on how busy they are that day.
Yeah, exactly. When you go in and there's 80 people sitting in line, you think they're looking real close and asking questions? Of course they're not. They're processing the paperwork as quick as they can. Okay. What happens when people who have registered and voted illegally, how do you take their vote back out of the system?
Honestly, unless you do forensics, you can't.
You can't even do it under forensics, because we have.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah,
we have a truly secret ballot.
Secret ballot. Yeah.
Because when I walk in the voting booth, they hand me a card and say, "Plug it into any machine."
Yeah. Now here's an interesting thing here, Chuck. I just pulled this up. This is USA Today hitting. It was updated yesterday morning. Headline. With Florida recount over, well, we know now it's going to a hand recount, Andrew Gillum's last chance to become governor rests with the courts.
Exactly.
So, you know, here we go. Here we go again. After all is said and done, we're going to tie it up in court. Again, like I said, it may be 6 months before we decide who is the U.S. Senator from Florida and who is the new governor.
Sadly, I think
it's ridiculous.
Sadly, I think the U.S. Supreme Court's going to get involved, and they're basically going to come down the same way they did in 2000. The results stand as they are.
That would be the safe. That would be the safe place to be, I think.
And in fact, I think the Florida Supreme Court will probably do the same thing. I don't know for sure. I don't know the makeup of the court. I don't know whether they're decent jurists or not. But the fact is that this is a pluperfect mess, and you know, you can't win at the ballot box. You attempt to win in the courts. No. The courts should have nothing to do with results except adjudicating whether the law applies or not. Not mm-hmm. deciding, oh well, there was you know, an extenuating circumstance here, and therefore we should allow certain votes to be excluded. Certain votes should be excluded, those cast by non-citizens. Now, why did I bring up what I said before, Barry? It's yes. important to realize that once those illegal votes are cast, you can't take them out of the system. So,
right.
are there elections decided on illegal voting? And the answer is absolutely there are.
And Andrew Gillum's hoping that one of them's his. Now, here's the quote from his statement about the recount. Quote, "A vote denied is justice denied. The state of Florida must count every legally cast vote." You see what he's doing there? Once a vote's cast, then it's hard to say which ones are legal and which ones are illegal.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's impossible.
Exactly. So you got to be able to parse and read between these lines of these people. It's really kind of scary.
Oh, it's absolutely frightening. It's absolutely.
Well, Chuck, there are ways of getting around all of these voting improprieties. And I know we've only got a few minutes left here, but I want to kind of just do a quick segue, and we'll talk about it more in a later program. But as I mentioned, you know, it is lame duck season. And so while all these recounts are going on from the election, well, we actually are moving forward with business, because there's only two elections that recounts are happening in Ohio. One is for a state house seat in suburban Cincinnati, which I heard last night has been settled, and the incumbent Republican is retaining the seat. That's Jonathan Deaver down in suburban Cincinnati. And another one here in Franklin County for a state Senate seat that, well, okay, the incumbent, well, I shouldn't say incumbent because it was a House member running for an open Senate seat, but the Republican member has privately, privately noted that there is every likelihood that they will not be successful with winning once all of the ballots are cast, the provisionals and everything else are finalized in the recount.
Yep.
That's Ann Gonzalez, your former state representative, Chuck, who was running for the state Senate seat in the 3rd District, and who looks like she will probably lose to Democrat Tina Maharoth. Now, Maharoth is infamous in Franklin County because the Republican Senatorial Committee spent nearly $1 million in ads attacking Maharoth because when she was a 16-year-old teenager, she was involved in an accident, and it's never been clear what she caused it or if it was just a secondary thing, where a bicyclist was hit and killed. She had contended that she wasn't the one who hit and killed him, but she didn't see him and she ran over him.
Yeah.
So I think she was charged with, not with, like, you know, vehicular manslaughter or something of that nature, and has since, you know, been, I guess, rehabilitated.
She's done her time. Well, essentially she did her time.
Yeah, well, she was a minor, so that time wasn't. So
yeah,
it wasn't
well,
a time.
There was,
but, and that's fine because you know we all make major mistakes and do things, and you know, teenagers, a 16-year-old getting behind the wheel, things can happen. I'm not excusing it.
No,
it's sad that someone lost their life, and whether or not she was the precipitating cause of that or an ancillary cause. Is really not here or there, but the Republicans were trying to beat her up. And it was interesting, Chuck, because they felt she was so dangerous, but she was a candidate who her own party would not endorse, who they recruited and ran a candidate against her in the primary, which she beat, and who now looks like she, after all provisionals are counted, are going to win what has been historically a Republican Senate seat.
That's a solid,
the Franklin County Republican Party is the gang that can't shoot straight.
Exactly.
And they ended up losing 3 House seats in that Senate district that switched from Republican to Democrat.
And that's a pretty good trick, but I guess we can thank Doug Price and the boys for essentially throwing away Franklin County.
Absolutely. I think there may be two. There's only one member of the House left in Franklin County that's Republican. That's Laura Linnese down in the Grove City area. The entire rest of the county's House caucus is all Democrat. They hold now three of the state Senate seats as Democrats. It's not a pretty day for the Franklin County Republicans. And I think they only hold one countywide office, and that's Clarence Mingo, the county office.
Clarence Mingo, yeah.
That's it.
Well, as a former Franklin Countyan, I can tell you that there's a lot of flight out of that district, people getting away from what used to be conservative strongholds, me from Westerville. And by the way, Ann Gonzalez was also on city council there, and I couldn't stand her when she was on city council either, when she moved from city council to the Ohio House. I was not a happy boy, and I have campaigned for opponents for her before. And I'm frankly not unhappy to see her go. She's one of those people that for some reason the Republican Party leadership in the houses in the legislative body she sat in loved her for some reason. Can't figure out why. She is dishonest, and in fact she was a reliable vote for special interest. And by special interest, I mean hospital lobbies, all kinds of she could be counted on to vote against pro-life issues, all kinds of things that she's just a bad player on. And you know, what I say is good riddance. Now, here's the problem. You were talking about heartbeat, and you know we've only got about 3 minutes left. You were talking about heartbeat, Bill, and have we talked about the Stand Your Ground legislation that passed?
No. Well, in heartbeat, we didn't really talk about either. Yeah. And we could probably talk a bit more about that in the next program. But yeah, just to say, the Ohio House last night, and I was there until 7:30 when it all got done, passed the Heartbeat Unborn Protection Act by a margin of 60 to 35. And that 60 is very important because that's the number you need to override a promised veto from Governor John Kasich on this bill. So it's sent to the Senate with the message that the House has got the votes to override. Now you need to do the same thing, and then send it and force the governor to, I'm going to try to run in 2020. To basically give him a black eye on a pro-life issue. And I think that is really where it needs to come down.
And if Stand Your Ground passes the Senate as well, he'll veto that, be my guess.
Oh, he's already promised a veto on that as well, but it passed, I think, with even bigger margins.
Right.
So, and the Senate will likely bring it home with a veto-proof, bring both bills home with veto-proof majorities. And during Wednesday's session, they overrode the governor's veto against having transparency in the agency process. So, he was trying to, keep behind closed doors on how agencies handle their rules. And, the legislature said, no, we need oversight on that.
Well, what I want to know is where were they in 2012? And I can tell you where they were in 2012. They were basically giving him anything that they could give him between 2012 and 2014. Anything they could give him so that he could run for president and not have the problem of having a recalcitrant legislature sitting back home. He didn't have that embarrassment. Boo-hoo for Johnny. He's going to go out with bruised and battered. And it's not going to look so good for when he runs for president against Trump in 2020, which he's going to do. He's going to pick up the John McCain banner and run with it. The guy he voted for in 2016, he's going to emulate his hero, John McCain.
Yeah, so, John McCain, yeah. It's you're looking at John McCain 2.0 is what John Kasich's trying to do.
Okay, now you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.